The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, and it's under the heading of Real People, Memory Keeper, The Grandmother of Juneteenth, How Activist Opal Lee Sparked the Movement That Turned a Cherished Tradition into Our Newest National Holiday. Have you ever had a gut feeling about something? I felt positively like I hadn't done enough with my life. I'd finished college, gotten a master's degree, taught school, worked as a social worker, had children. We had a farm. Our food bank served 500 families a day. I was volunteering for Habitat for Humanity. But even so, even into my 80s, I had a nagging feeling that I should be doing more. And I had always thought that Juneteenth was a day everybody ought to know about. The day in 1865, when the last of the people held in bondage in Texas learned they were free. So, in 2016, I began a march from Fort Worth to Washington, D.C., to draw attention to Juneteenth. I didn't walk the whole way, but I did make it to Washington. In 2019, I started a petition, and we garnered 1.5 million signatures in favor of the holiday. People talked about it, and of course, the death of George Floyd and the demonstrations for social justice that followed have helped draw attention to the cause. The fact that Juneteenth became a national holiday in my lifetime, I'm still on cloud nine. I could do a holy dance, except they'd say I was twerking. Older people don't always remember this, but we have power. We have so much to teach the younger generations. I know some people are afraid. They don't want to be bothered, or they draw into themselves. But the future depends on us. We can't be satisfied with just having Juneteenth made into law. We've got joblessness, homelessness, health care, climate change. If we don't address these things, nobody is going to. We have to educate, because the books don't always tell the truth. I've seen pictures in textbooks of black folks picking cotton, and they almost looked like they were enjoying themselves. I picked cotton, and ain't nothing enjoyable about it. You have to stand up and say, these things cannot happen anymore. Lately, you hear talk about our differences, but under our skin, we're the same. We bleed red blood, all of us. Freedom isn't something just for black people to celebrate. It's for everybody. I would like to see our country celebrate freedom from Juneteenth to the 4th of July. Now, that would be a celebration. If each one of us could convince one person who's not on the same page, we could do it. It's not going to happen in a day or a week. We have to work on it, slowly, persistently. But that's how change happens. And this story was told to David Hockman. Retired teacher Opal Lee, 95, lives in Fort Worth, Texas. On June 18th, she led a multi-city fundraising walk called Opal's Walk for Freedom. And there's a picture here of Opal sitting in her home in her library. And she's on a leather couch, and she's surrounded. You see a corner of her room, and it looks like the whole room must be a library because she's just, there's bookshelves, solid bookshelves on her walls. And then there's a sidebar here about the history of Juneteenth. 1865, the U.S. Army arrives in Galveston, Texas, and on June 19th informs enslaved African Americans of their freedom. 1866, annual June 19th Jubilee Day celebrations begin in Texas with parades, cookouts, prayer gatherings, and music. 1968, so 100 years later and then some, the Reverend Ralph Abernathy calls Juneteenth Solidarity Day in the Poor People's Campaign. 1979, the Texas legislature makes Juneteenth a state holiday. 2016, with 45 states now recognizing Juneteenth, Opal Lee, 89, begins her journey from Texas to Washington, D.C. And finally, 2021, Congress passes a law to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. Now, in the same AARP magazine, under Money Saver, let's look at big decisions, what to do with your wealth. Experts weigh in on family gifts, powers of attorney, and funding a relative's business. Choice number one. I think I want to start shifting wealth to my heirs before I die. Should I? And is there a smart way to do it? To answer the first question, should I? Start by asking yourself the most obvious follow-up. Do you have enough money to support your desired retirement standard of living without fear of running out? Says Thomas E. Murphy, CEO of Murphy and Silvest Wealth Management in Dallas. You might live far longer than you expect, he adds. Assuming you can answer Murphy's question with a confident yes, giving money now rather than later has some benefits, many of which have little to do with financial advantages. Among the biggest is that you can enjoy seeing the benefit of your gift. A colleague of Murphy's says his parents have started doing that on a smaller scale by switching to cash gifts for their grandchildren. The grandparents' condition is they get to hear what the kids have bought, so they can share in the joy. You also get the opportunity to have a meaningful conversation about money, discussing your values and hopes. I encourage clients to teach the concept of stewardship and use money to accomplish important goals, said Murphy. Some additional suggestions for how to do it right. Fund the future. The best way to shift wealth is to support those activities which have proven to be life-improving, says Murphy. That means education and retirement savings. When teenage grandchildren start working, Murphy suggests contributing to a Roth IRA on their behalf. The $6,000 annual Roth contribution cap for workers under age 50 is far below the $16,000 a year you can give anyone without having to make a tax gift filing. Or match retirement plan contributions to get them into the habit of saving. If you pay college tuition directly to the school, that money doesn't count towards your gift tax exemption. Pick up the tab. Funding a family vacation or other joint activity has benefits beyond the shared experience and the pleasant memories. When you pay, it frees up money for your kids to spend on other things, says Murphy. That has the same effect as giving them cash. Trust, don't control. If you want to dictate how your heirs can spend your money or manage at what pace they receive it, you'll need to pass it on to them via a trust. There can be good reasons to use a trust for gifts, Murphy notes, including protection from creditors or shielding assets if your child divorces. But imposing such strict controls can backfire. You may be trying to protect your child from themselves or change their behavior, he notes. The problem is your child may end up resenting you. Choice number two. I'm really struggling about who to give my durable power of attorney to. How do I decide? A durable power of attorney lets someone handle your finances when you no longer can due to a medical emergency, say, or cognitive decline. Because the person will have full access to your wealth, don't rush this important decision, says Margarita Cheng, CEO of Blue Ocean Global Wealth in Gaithersburg, Maryland. But don't drag your feet either. Think attributes, not relationships. Consider who would be competent, not just who you are closest with. An ideal candidate is organized, calm in a crisis, and a good communicator, Cheng says. Physical proximity can be handy, but it's not crucial. Give it a test run. Are you uncomfortable with the idea of ceding control? Then ease into that move by arranging first for your potential surrogate to get duplicates of your financial statements, or add that person to your accounts as a trusted contact, which means the financial services company can reach out to that person if something seems awry. And GoPro. If you're not sure who you can trust or you foresee family conflicts, you can name a professional fiduciary who might be an accountant, a lawyer, or a bank trust officer. Choice number three. My granddaughter wants me to invest in her new business. Should I do that? It's common for grandparents to want to help, perhaps in hopes their grandchildren can achieve dreams that the grandparent was never able to pursue, says Patrick Durst, a financial planner at Front Range Financial in Centennial, Colorado. Before you act on that impulse, ask yourself how this gift would affect your own financial plans. If it will have no material impact, take these steps. Talk business. Even if you are simply making a gift, not investing in the enterprise, you should ask to see a business plan or offer to help develop one. The biggest thing I see is the grandkid wants help for something that's not fleshed out, says Durst. Not only do you want to see that your grandchild has thought this through, but also you want to see passion, which is a good indicator your grandchild is taking the venture seriously and is willing to work hard. Consider the consequences. Taking a larger than usual withdrawal from a retirement account or selling some investments could have unintended consequences. For example, a spike in income could result in more of your Social Security being taxable or even trigger a higher Medicare premium. Look at the potential tax implications before making a decision, says Durst. IRA contributions could greatly increase the taxes you're paying on your Social Security. Play fair. If you're helping one grandchild, you may want to adjust your estate plans in favor of other heirs. You want to avoid giving special treatment to one over another, says Durst. One easy way to even out your help is to adjust your IRA beneficiary designations to leave more to your other heirs. And finally, decide on your role. Should you choose to treat your contribution as an investment and not a gift, one option would be to make a formal loan. You could even decide to become a business partner. That could be fun, especially if you're bored with retirement. But it could add complexity, says Durst. The holidays could get a little weird. And the writer of this was Ellen Stark, and she's a longtime writer and editor at Money Magazine. Moving on to AARP, the Bulletin, we started an episode last time on long-term care. This is a rather lengthy article, so it's going to take us several times to get through it. This time we're going to look at a view from the inside, an oral history of toil, toll, and loving devotion. This is by David Hockman. This very morning, in tens of millions of homes across the land, a spouse, child, friend, or parent will offer a steady hand to an older or infirm loved one, getting her dressed and fed, organizing pills, taking medical readings, setting him up for the day ahead. Later on, these family caregivers might pay their loved one's bills, deal with insurance claims, even do their shopping. Only when all that is handled, they can focus on their own lives. To reveal the full span of their devotion, challenge, and frustration, AARP interviewed dozens of caregivers. Here's a glimpse of life from some of them. First signs. This is Brian Kramer, 52. He has been caring full-time for his now 54-year-old wife at home in Hemet, California, since May 2016. It was Friday the 13th, and I got a call at work from my sister-in-law saying she couldn't get into our house. I knew my wife was home, so I rushed over. The door would only open about 2 inches because my wife was on the floor. Norma was alive, but she had had a massive stroke at the age of 48. Jeanette Linius, 57, she has gradually taken on more caregiving responsibilities at home in Minneapolis as her 89-year-old mom's health has declined. It wasn't one thing, it was lots of things. Pneumonia, a heart condition, hospitalizations, mild cognitive impairment that kept getting worse. I had to step in. Laura Cruz, 64, a hired aide, helps by day, but she takes over caregiving after work for her husband, 67, who has frontotemporal dementia at their home in the Seattle area. For a while, Don didn't need care every minute, but then I would come home and find bizarre things. He broke a plate and tried to glue it with Gorilla Glue and got the glue everywhere. Then he took it on himself to repair the deck by drilling in random screws. I was horrified. Don was a Boeing engineer, but now he didn't have any idea what he was doing. Somebody had to watch him. A little sidebar thing here. In 2020, 26% of U.S. caregivers were tending to someone with dementia or Alzheimer's disease, up from 22% in 2015. Next person, Amy Goyer, 61, AARP's National Family and Caregiving Expert, has been a caregiver since age 20 for various family members. I'm the youngest of four girls. I wasn't married. I didn't have children. I worked in aging. It was only natural that when my grandparents needed help, I set up services, monitored care, even put up the Christmas tree and fixed their old Victrola. Carol McCarrick, 64, she works full-time while also caring for her husband, 70, at home in Kerrsville, Texas, since 2013. Steve worked full-time and on the side rode horses, took 150-mile bike rides, taught classes. One day he came in and just dropped from an aneurysm. We live in rural Texas. He had to be airlifted. If I wasn't there, he would have died. Karen Mason, 62. She cares for her disabled adult daughter at home in Forest City, Arkansas. Tasha, my daughter, was born with cerebral palsy. Taking care of her wasn't a choice. It's been my reality every day for 37 years. Jeannie Ollinger, 61. She has overseen care full-time for her 38-year-old son in Oklahoma City since his 2008 car accident. She also cared for her aunt at home and in a nursing home until her aunt's death last September. I remember going for a walk as they bathed Chris at the hospital. He was 24 and had suffered brain injuries they said would be permanent. I realized this was going to be a long journey, but I committed to it. In that instant, I let go of whatever I thought the future looked like. The confusion of care options. Laura Cruz. I didn't know what to do. Honestly, I just started searching online for caregiver. You see all these choices: adult daycare, in-home care, nursing facilities, assisted living, continuing care. You call places and everyone says, yes, yes, we can help. But I never really felt good about these conversations. Everyone felt like a sales pitch. Then my neighbor said, hey, I know this older lady who might help. She's been with us ever since. Karen Mason. You piece it together. Family, hired help, respite care. No way was I putting my daughter in a nursing home. When I was younger, I worked as a visiting nurse in some of the finest facilities money can buy. Chandeliers, baby grand pianos. But the care was deplorable. Xander Keeg, 55. He is a trans man and Coast Guard veteran, caring for his Marine Corps veteran father, who's now 81, in Daytona Beach, Florida. I got Dad enrolled in the geriatric clinic at the local VA, and a VA-sponsored adult daycare program. He moved in with my wife and me, but at a certain point, we noticed things like Dad no longer understood how to operate the microwave. He couldn't be left alone all day. We found a residential facility nearby with six bedrooms that looked great, but was $3,000 a month, and my dad was only getting $1,740 a month from Social Security. We ended up having to put him in a much larger Independent Plus program at an assisted living facility about 2.5 hours away. And we'll keep on with that in upcoming visits, but now let's move on to The Complete Guide to Memory by Centennial Health. And we're also kind of in the middle of an episode here. History is not destiny. Devastating or traumatic experiences can alter your cells, and these changes could be passed down through generations, much like the genes in your original genetic code, even if the stressor abates. But the news is not completely grim. Even though this kind of damage might be transmitted from parent to child, the past can be overcome. Humans can compensate for this kind of damage with strengths in other parts of the body and brain. For instance, an obese mother develops epigenetic changes that place her offspring at risk for obesity. But if she has gastric bypass surgery reversing her obesity, then her epigenetic profile is corrected as well, and the risk to her child disappears. Exercise and meditation forge new brain connections and pathways, ultimately allowing people to bypass vulnerable regions weakened by toxic experience, so they can operate from a position of strength. In one of the most ambitious reviews of the data on resilience to date, researchers from King's College London in England found that different individuals react to extremely adversity and stress in a wide range of ways. While some individuals develop psychiatric conditions such as post-traumatic stress disorder or major depressive disorder, others recover from stressful experiences without displaying significant symptoms of psychological ill health, demonstrating stress resilience, the author explains. Among the factors that have helped people overcome toxic stress, the researchers list social connectivity, a sense of humor, and a proactive approach to life's problems. At the end of the day, protecting future brains from past wars and disasters and from the corrosive stress of poverty and abuse requires social policies and cultures that can help boost resilience. Brains can be protected by elements such as good health care, excellent education, strong family ties, flexible working hours, and ample vacations. These types of policies and values can open up a window of plasticity. McEwen states, shaping brain circuits in a more positive direction. Even if the road out of the past has been wrought with stress and trauma, even if, like Armin, your family has lived through years of brutal displacement and war, the trajectory can be changed. And with this section, we have a sidebar article, Memory Hack, Overcoming Your Family's Traumatic Story. Whether your family's toxic patterns have been passed down through alterations in your cells or transmitted psychologically, here are some straightforward ways to move forward and heal. Confront the past. Recognize your family's history and the pain it has caused. By understanding these traumatic historic memories, including the experience of your parents and grandparents, you can begin to make sense of family patterns and put the brakes on abuse and violence before they begin the cycle again. Promote brain plasticity through exercise. Physical activity, like aerobic exercise, will encourage new connections between brain cells. If a sedentary individual walks an hour a day, 5 days a week, then the hippocampus, the seat of memory, will get larger. Inoculate yourself against stress. Practice yoga and other mind-body interventions. Evidence now suggests these techniques work by reversing expression of genes involved in inflammatory reactions induced by stress. Those are the same genes thought to be turned up epigenetically by poverty, violence, war, and chronic stress. Maintain and strengthen your social connections in the real world. Keep in touch with family and meet friends for casual gatherings. And finally, push back against the negative events from your family's past. Tap into positive thoughts and proactively work on building a better future while consciously recognizing and rejecting old patterns. Now, finishing out our time today, we still have some helpful hints from AARP Bulletin about saving money. We're actually on 79 out of 99. And this part, as we left it last time, was about dental care. Have a talk about x-rays. If you aren't at higher than normal risk for cavities, you may need dental x-rays only every 2 to 3 years, says the American Dental Association. Talk it over with your dentist. Potential savings, $116 a year. Number 80, invest in prevention. An in-office fluoride varnish or home treatment with a prescription toothpaste could repair eroded tooth enamel and stop early tooth decay from becoming a full-fledged cavity. That could save you $130 on a filling. Now here's some AARP member benefits. Here's some discounts that they offer. Number 81, Norton Ultimate Help Desk. Up to 15% off remote IT troubleshooting for computers, laptops, mobile devices, and more from Norton Ultimate Help Desk. Restaurants, number 82, 15% off at Denny's, plus 10% off at Outback Steakhouse, Carrabba's, Italian Grill, and Bonefish Grill. Number 83, grocery coupons. Members can print free coupons from leading brands at the Grocery Coupon Center, powered by coupons.com. 84. Credit card. Approved card members earn 3% cash back on airfare, hotel stays, and car rentals, 2% on restaurant purchases, and 1% on all other purchases with the AARP Travel Rewards MasterCard from Barclays. 85. Audible. AARP members can save on Audible memberships. 86. Walgreens. Link your AARP membership and My Walgreens accounts, and you'll earn 10% Walgreens cash rewards on Walgreens branded health and wellness products, and 7% Walgreens cash rewards on Walgreens branded beauty products. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.